Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. It's educated educators talking education. Dr. Johnny Lupinacci in the house, producer extraordinaire, chairman of the boards. Jacob is also hanging with us. It is a Wednesday. It is classes in session. And if you've been listening, yes, it's me, Tim. I'm back. I've got two, I don't know if you call them new teeth, but I've got two teeth now that work. I know Johnny and Jacob, you guys didn't tell the listener, you know, where I was when I kind of fell off the back of the Busted Pencils mobile last week. But, you know, sometimes when you bite down on things like Jolly Ranchers, your teeth don't agree with you believing that you can crunch through a Jolly Rancher. Or kind of remind you of that old commercial, you know, how many licks does it take to get to the center of a Tootsie Roll Tootsie Pop? And was it the owl clicks in and goes, one? Well, how many Jolly Rancher crunches with Tim's mouth does it take to break two teeth? One. Same answer as how many licks it takes to get to the middle or the center of a Tootsie Roll Tootsie Pop. How's that for kind of letting you guys know where I was?
Yeah, well, there you were, man. Well, we missed you, but we have you back, man. We're excited because class is in session, folks. That's right, Pencil Buster is out there. Class is in session. Tim, I'm curious, though. That's a lot of time. That's a lot of time with sitting in a chair getting... You know, getting worked on. Yeah. And so much has happened. We're curious, Jacob and I. I mean, Jacob and I, we've been talking hockey. We've been talking, mm-hmm. you know, talking the talk, walking the walk, breaking pencils together. But we missed you. So want a little update. Class today. Yeah. What's Tim up to? Tim, what are you thinking about?
Well, I tell you, you know, I got to start with just realizing and recognizing the fact that, you know, major technology conference that went on last week, you know, the what is the ASU plus GSV summit, essentially, you know, where they're all the people who are talking a lot about ed tech. The Secretary of Education, Linda McMahon, who is, you know, been tasked with creating or actually taking away her ability to maintain the job as Secretary of Education. She's been tasked with taking, you know, apart the Department of Ed. But she actually showed up there and introduced a whole new technology.
I don't know if it's new, Tim. It's been around.
Well, it's been one of my favorite
kitchen technologies for quite some time.
It's a new application.
It's a new application. Who knew? A1. Our Secretary of Education, you know, kind of went a little rogue talking about the impact of A1. And if we could get A1 into every classroom in America, the potential, you know, leaps and bounds forward education could propel itself with A1. And I got to say, from, you know, being a Pittsburgh native, I'm willing to drop down to the Heinz factory and ask them if they'd be willing to provide A1 sauce for America's classrooms. I'm just saying I'm willing to step up to that, Johnny and Jay.
Well, I love it, Tim. I mean, big fan of the A1 sauce. Also, you know, growing fan of the AI too, like in slow conversion here between the Tim pro AI, Johnny anti AI feud here. It's been a little bit of a ceasefire
between us
and more of a convergence, a peace talk. An example of democracy in action here. But yeah. Man, I'm not going to lie. I love A1 sauce. The idea of could I have had it in school? You know, could the cafeteria fries gotten better? Well, little did I know A1 was coming to all of our classrooms. Big fun to have some fun with that little mistake. That
was a little faux pas, but it reminds me, though, too, of, you know, I don't know that this one was a faux pas. If you go back in time, do a little history here, is that we had another important person one time in history, you know, refer to, you know, well, people would say lots of people make this, as she called it, a vegetable at the time, catsup, however you say it. Nancy Reagan pointed out that those kids with school lunches, if you just give them ketchup, they get their vegetable for the day. And so I'm just, you know, here we are again now, you know, Linda McMahon. No, we know it was a faux pas. And, you know, in fact, when I look at that, I wonder how many times potentially somebody who really, you know, maybe hasn't had a lot to hear about AI might just quickly jump in and say A1. Were the comedians and the hucksters a little too harsh on Linda McMahon this weekend? Or what do you think, Jacob?
I don't think they were too harsh. I think, for me personally, I agree with you. I don't know if this was a mistake or if it's on purpose. It seems like it's totally in line with what a great man once said, President George W. Bush. Seldom is the question asked, is our children learning? So it seems right in that vein. So it might just be a Republican thing.
It might be. Well, we've all been there, Tim. I'll say that with some humility too. I've definitely had something else come out of my mouth that wasn't exactly, you know, as I say here, I'm a words guy. All words matter. I don't think they were too harsh. It's all good and fun, especially for comedians. Comedians, we got to have a space where comedy can help shine a light on sometimes just those little mistakes that we all make. We all have been there. So, you know, hopefully Linda McMahon's chuckling a little bit.
It's got to be a funny one. And you say the follow up on this, I mean, got to love Kraft Heinz. Kraft Heinz is actually asking, you know, was she serious? Because they feel like they're up
to the contract.
They feel like they're up to the challenge. Yeah, you know,
huge contract. Love it. All right. No more free ads here.
No, but the other thing I've been really thinking about, and it was interesting to see a post in Monday's Inside Higher Education from Stephen Mintz dealing with the future of higher education. And, you know, Johnny, we talk a lot about, you know, higher ed. We talk a lot about people are like, K-12, you guys talk about, but we spend, you know, also we want to make sure that when we're talking about teaching and learning, you know, we go back and forth between all those places. And we've had quite a few conversations regarding college, higher education, university, whatever you want to call it. In fact, you know, our partnership with the Association of College and University Educators, Jonathan Gurko out there, you know, and the ways that colleges can improve. But Stephen Mintz, great author, great professor, history professor, University of Texas, Austin, I think is where he's at, has a piece, The Coming Higher Education Shakeout. Over the next decade, American higher education will undergo a profound shakeout. And for a listener maybe saying like, well, this isn't new news for you guys, Tim and Johnny here. You guys do kind of talk about, you know, what's the future of higher education? Are colleges even going to be around? I really appreciate Stephen's piece here because I have been thinking actually a lot about this in ways, and I tend to think that I like to think about this from a positive perspective and really realizing that lots of institutions of higher education really have an opportunity in this moment, as opposed to a threat in this moment, to really take advantage and to say, you know what, we do something or some things really, really well. And here's what it is. And in fact, we're going to go out and proudly talk about the things that we do great, the things that we have to offer. And in fact, here, maybe even to the point of saying, okay, look, the Harvards, the Browns, the Bowdens, they're all going to be fine from, you know, from now on for the longest time. Right. Those elite, some Ivy, those, you know, even some of the major research public institutions, they're going to continue to get the enrollments largely from the standpoint of proudly proclaiming that they only allow 4 to 8% of the applicants that actually apply to get in. And so they create a fake scarcity of space, therefore then making sure that they continue to always get the applicants. But regionals and privates here, I see this as, well, I guess there is a warning of realizing, but I see this as a real opportunity to step up as an institution of higher education and say, you know what? Maybe even own a little bit of going, some of the things in the past that we've done aren't great. We're working hard at improving on them. And in fact, at this institution, just call it, you know, Institution X, we do X or Y way better than anybody else. And if you're child, if you returning adult learner, if you career changer want, desire, or feel the need for this education writ large, we're the institution for you. And what I think about though when I see this is that, Johnny, I'm gonna ask this question, how many institutions see this moment as an opportunity versus how many institutions see potentially even what Stephen's writing is going, sorry, what we do at our college and our university stands on its own regardless of what the public thinks, because we know what's best. We know, you know, our silo distribution of stand and lecture, it's just, we know for sure that this is what all students need. We're not changing. We're not bowing. Our institution has been in business for 150 years. We've been offering quality education by the ranks of the professors that we hire, by the classes we offer. We're not changing a thing. How many institutions are kind of taking that approach? And how many institutions are looking at this and saying, I've been waiting for this moment to step up, to stand out, and to proudly proclaim we do education incredibly powerfully at our institution. That's what I was thinking about as they were doing things to my teeth.
Well, Tim, that's a lot of thinking. At least you're probably the best patient ever. The dentist says, man, this guy just sits here. He's deep in thought.
Well, dude, had that thing around my mouth and then the thing primed my mouth open so I couldn't say anything other than so I had to just sit there and think.
Absolutely, Tim. Well, I think this is important, and I'm excited that this conversation is going on. It's not a new conversation. I mean, it's been brewing for quite some time, you know, in like any industry. And I cringe a little bit when I say that as an educated educator. I mean, I believe, you know, you talked a lot about what colleges are doing or have been doing. And I believe that higher education is truly a wonderful opportunity that should be accessible to everyone. I think a well-rounded education contributes to the kind of democratic citizenry, right, that helps make really great decisions towards the common good. I mean, here we are always talking about democracy in action and public education, and higher education absolutely, to me, ought to be, you know, a strong thread in the fabric or the quilt of, you know, democracy through education. I love that. I think it's strong in this country. I think there are amazing, you know, community college systems. I think there are great state colleges across our country. I think there are great privates that contribute to that as well. However, I cringe at this part, you know, that education serves a purpose, and it's long been debated or understood by educational historians. The first kind of primary purpose of public schools is political, right? Mm-hmm. We got a new country, relatively new, way back, taking it way, way back. You know, we got a newer country. And how are we going to ensure that democratic values, that democracy, understanding the importance of having overthrown a king, you know, and declared independence and having a democracy will work? How will it stick? How can we ensure that we have strong citizens in this democracy? Now, of course, I'm writing a little bit of a free pass right now that I don't want our critical historians out there to think like, oh, he's romanticizing the past. Because, of course, that wasn't an education that was accessible to most. Mm-hmm. You know, it was an elite thing. But its primary purpose was political, right, Tim? We could say like, hey, here's how you underwrite a new government, a new country. You ensure its future through a strong education system. And in fact, in this country, pretty early on, compulsory education, right, had a political purpose. Learning to read and make decisions, understanding democratic values together, having some socialization in our community as part of our youth development. And it was a political purpose. Well, the Industrial Revolution in this continent, Tim, right? We saw there was a big boom. Mm-hmm. Factories developing, expansion of the West. Again, another big free pass, not getting into the awful things that mm-hmm. were unleashed in this country in terms of, you know, mm-hmm. excessive classism, you know, xenophobia against immigrants, genocide on Native Americans, all that kind of happened at the same time. But the expansion of the West and really the Industrial Revolution of this country saw an economic purpose start to be in combat with that political purpose. What that means boiled down is we have stuff like the teachers' unions starting in Chicago, where Margaret Haley would say, hey, big factories, we are not teaching your curriculum. We're not training these young people to be factory workers. In fact, the workers who are working in your factories are sending children to our public schools to have a very different future, to have possibilities beyond the factory floor, right? And that's not putting down factory work mm-hmm. right, as well. But there was an era, and we sort of have seen that era carried forward for a century or so in terms of, hey, we're going to have big, I'll put it out there kind of in modern context, big corporate influences on what's taught in school. So you've had this kind of age-old debate between a political purpose of education, a social studies teacher saying, you got to know your history in order to make good decisions. You got to learn core democratic values. You got to have a developed worldview. You know, you got to understand differences and diverse cultures in order to be thinking about, you know, your role as a democratic citizen. Well, the economic purpose being that other voice is saying, you just need to make sure these kids are ready for work, right? That they're prepared for their jobs. And most of us live in today experienced teaching in some kind of hybrid of influences, both political and economic. Hey, you got to be a good democratic citizen, because being a good democratic citizen is also being a contributing member of the economy. And that means working. So what job are you learning skills towards? So it's been a hybrid for a really long time. And I would say in the last 20, 30 years, we'd had an even bigger influence kind of born out of those two competing. And that's that we're developing consumers. You got to be buying stuff out there. You got to be, which requires both political and economic training. So where I'm going with this, Tim, is we have over time learned that we have to buy a college degree in order to be well understood in the politics of a democracy, as well as to have a job, an economic purpose. And so universities or higher education writ large, and you hinted at this, a lot of the, you know, the few that I'll call extraneous from this, the smaller traditionals, I call them like in that consumer context, the Rolexes, right? If I'm going out shopping for a watch, Rolex is already priced out of my reality. I might desire one, but it's not in my economic means to go out and purchase a Rolex, right? But I know it's a high quality watch. I know it's desired. And if I had those economic means, I might consider a Rolex. It's a really good watch, right? Free ad for Rolex. If you want to reach out and sponsor Busted Pencils, we're already giving you free demo ads. But my example being, they don't need the change, right? Yeah. They're kind of, I'll call them extraneous from this conversation in higher ed. By and large, everybody else has to be thinking about the change. And it's a long overdue conversation of where does the political purpose of education, where's the economic purpose of education, and how we are deeply entrenched in a consumer model where young people or people of any age are out there shopping for a degree. So flash forward, Tim, you talked about us professors. You know, we're in that demographic.
Yeah, come on, man. I want to know where you're at on whether or not you're up to the challenge, dude.
I mean, I've been up to the challenge since I accepted it. For a lot of people teaching in higher ed, they understand, and I'm going to cringe at these terms, but I'm going to speak in that consumer model for a minute. We're delivering a product, and that product has to have strong political, you know, roots. It has to be towards Democrat. Now, when I say that, I don't mean like we're representing Republicans or Democrats in our craft and our teaching, but in democracy, we're teaching towards a better world, towards a common good, towards a scientific literacy, towards a discourse and ability to write, read, communicate, and function in our economies as democratic citizens that uphold and value core democratic principles, right? But there's also an economic purpose. People are coming to college to learn skills and knowledge that they can apply towards their career, right? That they can put to work in a pathway that will, you know, be one that they can make a living doing. And so there's that's another important product that higher ed is in. Like we deliver, you know, a pathway to a career. But also we have to understand that gone, and I want to say public school teachers across our country get this, especially public school principals and superintendents out there, you school leaders, you've dealt with this. We aren't necessarily prepared, or we've had to sort of learn, land the plane, build the plane to land it. Like we're in the air and we're going, we have an academic year, we have a model of education, but we also have to adjust to the fact that there are high consumer demands, that we are now competing. Like we have to have marketing, we have to have recruiting, we have to have all these things while balancing a strong political and economic. So this is my take, Tim. There is a place for everybody who understands what we do in higher ed to be in higher ed. That is like, you might be a researcher. You might be like in a more scholarly role. You may be in a part scholarly and research role and teaching role, but our primary product is teaching. Mm-hmm. You know, we prepare young people, you know, for the world that's ahead of them. And that is a changed world. So we have to be adapting and changing as it goes. That said, we are doing that in the largest marketplace of learning any of us have ever experienced in our lifetimes. So it's highly competitive and marketized, which I'm not a big fan of.
I know.
I've accepted that that is the world we're in. How do we navigate that, Tim? And so these kinds of conversations that I think institutions are having, what is our identity? What is our pride? What is our primary, you know, focus? What are the things that we are really good at? And how do we provide a very important service to both our local and people coming from afar to benefit from? And I want to say both, right? Mm-hmm. We have to have a focus on the both because public education includes higher ed, and higher education has a responsibility to the strength of a democracy. So we have to be asking ourselves, how are we balancing essentially those three worlds in order to make our contributions and sustain our existence, for lack of better words, as a company, right? We have a political obligation. That's not Republican or Democrat. That's democracy, right? We have an economic responsibility. We're preparing people in our programs and in our classrooms with skills and knowledge that they can directly apply to a career pathway, sometimes many pathways. Because you might hear, Tim, somebody say, well, that's why, you know, philosophy is not as important as maybe it was, you know, 50 years ago or 100 years ago, because do you really use philosophy every day on your job? And the answer is absolutely you do. We need philosophy courses. We need poetry courses. We need those humanity courses because they help you be a well-rounded thinker at your job, whether that job is laying bricks, right? Or whether that job is teaching philosophy classes. You understand the value of thinking, asking questions. How have people in the past answered questions that weren't definite answers? It's always dynamic, right? So we're thinking about that, as well as understanding that we are in a market. And that's the like, womp, womp, womp. Because that is not something I'd say by and large, most people working in higher education have a background in having to respond to. Right. I would say administrators know that a little differently. Tim, you shared the experience of like low enrollment and things and competing universities. You have to have an identity. You have to be good at what you do. And you have to have a great, clear message of this is our identity and here's how we're great at it.
Right.
Because that ultimately helps you be, you know, sustainable in a really, really tough market, right? In a really tough market right now. So I think that change has been on the horizon for some time. And now we're in it deep. And those conversations, like the Mintz article you shared this morning, the things that you bring up, certainly, Tim, the kind of work you're doing day to day and your new role, we'll get into that more on Busted Pencils here as it unfolds. But certainly as we continue to be champions of what I'll call high quality in support of democracy, higher education, it's going to look different than maybe it has for the last 100 years. But that doesn't mean we're changing everything. It just means we're adapting. Right. A good coach always says great teams adjust, adapt, and find ways to win. And I bring that to higher ed. Okay. That's the challenge, higher education folks out there. It's your call. Busted Pencils here. We're here with you doing it. It ain't easy work. Right. But how are you going to adjust, adapt, right? And find a way to win.
You know what? And I'm going to, before we close out the show, too, put that out there, too. Institutions, higher education, colleges out there, if you're doing these things, we would love to talk to you, your faculty, your students. You know, come on, Busted Pencils, and talk about the great things that your institution of higher education is engaged in. Because you know what? I mean, here's the thing. Johnny and I are going to always come down and say, we are 100% supporters of education, higher education, particularly. And if anything, man, we know you guys are out there doing great work. We just need to make sure that my neighbor right here across the street out my window down the road knows about those great things that are happening on your campuses. And so, Johnny, putting it out there, man, if you're doing great work, come on, Busted Pencils. Let's talk about it. Let's make sure that the world knows what your institution is jumping into. And now it's time for your moment of zen. Indeed, it is impossible to be neutral in a world already moving in certain directions, where wealth and power are already distributed in certain ways. Neutrality means accepting the way things are now.
Thanks for listening to Busted Pencils Class in Session. Welcome back, Tim. And you can always grab listeners out there. You can grab Busted Pencils podcasts like this one on Apple Podcasts, Spotify. And of course, you can always find us on the Civic Media website or at bustedpencils.com. Don't forget, you can also find us throughout the week every Monday, Wednesday, Friday with homerooms, Class in Session, and hurdles and home runs. And of course, Pencil Busters. You can always catch Busted Pencils at 3 p.m. Central Time across all the Civic Media Network stations for an hour of your favorite blue-collar scholars, Tim and Johnny, and keep busting pencils.